This is Violet Marcus and Belle Stock, and we're doing our interviewing with Roland Miller. It's December the 27th, and we're going to try to get the whole thing finished up today. Now, will you continue where you left off, Roland?
This is Violet Marcus. Belle Stock, we're interviewing Roland Miller on December 27th at his home on Stanton Avenue.
Roland,
you didn't tell us yet about what type of home life you had when you and your 11 brothers and sisters were growing up. What do you remember about the religion that was taught to you in your home, or lack of? Anything that you can recall as far as what atmosphere was there in your home growing up?
Well, we were Orthodox Jews, Montan, of course, observed all the prayers during the day. In the morning, he said his prayers, and in the evening, he also. As to religion, all the boys in the family were bar mitzvah. And Lou was one time, my oldest brother, as I remember being told, was in a choir when he was a boy. As to the others, Jacob was fairly religious, but generally speaking, we were not strictly observant as children, although we were brought up and we were educated very well in Hebrew. But we were more or less divided as to the type of observance. Some were reformed, others were conservative. As to the economic background of the family, we were not deprived of anything, more or less. We received our weekly small income from my dad and mother. And as to the family, Dad always did very well in building. And as I said previously, my brother Bill joined him when Bill was about 18, and my dad taught him all the facts about building construction. Lou, my oldest brother, joined later, as did Jacob, and Aaron, when he graduated from Carnegie Tech in building construction, also joined the firm. I myself was an attorney, and still am, of course, although I'm inactive status. But I joined the firm when I resigned from the office of the district attorney.
What year was that, Roland?
That was in October of 1944.
Okay. You can start, Roland.
When I was about 8 years old, there was a German bakery about two doors from our home on Whitty Street. The baker's wife allowed us to cake boxes showing gum that his son Johnny and I would go out to the ballpark with boxes of chewing gum, Bayside and Wrigley, Spearman and Beeman's gum, and sell chewing gum outside of the ballpark until the game began, of course, and then we'd walk back home. When I was about, I'd say 14, and many of the other boys on the street got into the ballpark as sellers of Coca-Cola and soft drinks, which we sold during the summer. And later on, we graduated to selling peanuts, chewing gum, stogies, and chocolate bars in the basket out of the ballpark inside during the pregame. We also stuffed peanuts in bags that we later sold, of course. And when I was about 15, I got a job at the Nixon Theater, passing out programs before the show began. And during intermission, I also carried trays of water glasses and passed them out to people during the intermission, and received, of course, tips in the glasses from people who appreciated my service. I also talked to numerous actors and actresses and boys like the child star in Penrod before the theater began. Passing out the programs, I wore a red coat by Harry Brown, who happened to be the manager of the Nixon at that time. I also was employed by McCreary's during the Christmas season, delivering packages personally on special order to people in the city and surrounding areas. When I was about 14, selling Coca-Cola at the ballpark, I want to tell you a story about my brothers who had a box seat there, and that was Lou and Bill. They were in the box seats one day with some clients and some architects. Of course, the box seat was for business purposes, to influence the clients in getting the job, more a public relations act. And here I was with my tray of Coca-Cola and my big mouth saying, "Coca-Cola, who wants a cold drink?" And all of a sudden I see my brothers in the box seat, and my brother Lou happened to turn around and see me, and I said to myself, "Holy hell, I better get out of here." And I did very fast. That evening, Lou said to me, How much do you make out of that damn park? I'll give you whatever you make and stay away.
Roland, do you recall what you did for recreation during your adolescent years?
Well, when I was about 8 to about 12, we played marbles by putting marbles in a ring and knuckling the larger marble, trying to hit as many as we can out of the ring. We also played what was known as cat and dog. That was a game where you had the dog was a piece of wood cut from the handle of a broom about a foot and a half long, and the cat was a piece of wood from the same handle of the broom about 6 inches long. We would place the cat on the Belgian blocks, which was the paving of the streets on Dean Witty Street, in between the Belgian blocks, and a little piece of the cat, that is a piece of wood, would stick above the ground. The idea was to hit the cat, that is the piece that stuck out, which would twirl into the air after being hit, and we would try to hit it with the dog, which was the foot and a half handle, as far as we could hit it. And the one who would hit it farthest up the street would win the game. We also played baseball and football, and went swimming out into the Soho Pool in Oakland. That is before you come to Oakland, out on Fifth Avenue. The delicacy we received afterwards was a cream puff at the corner of Kirkpatrick and Fifth Avenue, which was about a nickel a piece. Today they would sell for about 75 cents, but I would say they tasted better than the ones we receive today.
Okay.
During the winter season, my dad, being a carpenter, built a long bobsled for the older children, the boys and the girls, and they used to ride the bobsled from Center Avenue down toward Fifth Avenue at the corner of Caldwell Street down to Fifth Avenue. That area was covered with ashes to stop the sled riders from going any farther. I myself had a flexible flyer sled which I used to ride down the street during the winter. We also went skating out at Shanley Park. That was when I was only about 7 or 8, and of course later. That's how I learned how to skate, and I said previously I was on the ice hockey team at Fifth Avenue High.
Roland, I think that we would be very interested in how you met and married Sylvia. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the day I met Sylvia, my dad had passed away in January, and I hadn't been out of the house on any entertainment since that time until the middle of March. Some of the boys came over the house and said, you ought to go out a little bit. We have a date for this afternoon to go riding, and in Beachview, and I'd like to have you, we'd like to have you meet Helen Sissonwayne's sister, who I think you might like. So I was very reluctant to go out, but I did. I went riding that time. It was Leo Kosman and Jules Harris, my friends, took me out to Beachview to meet the girls. When we got there, I entered the house and happened to look up the stairs and saw Sylvia with the other girls. And I said to Jules Harris, is that the Sylvia, Helen's sister? And he said, yes, that's her. And I said to Jules, well, I think I'm going to marry her. And after we went riding and came back home, I had a say Kaddish from my dad at the B'nai Yisrael synagogue, and I said to Sylvia's mother, jokingly, do you know that I'm staying for dinner? And she said, my gosh, you're not. And I said, yes, I'm joking. So I left that a day, and since then I began calling Sylvia nightly at her home and taking her out until the day I married her. But in occasion in between that time, Sylvia was a playground instructor at the city playground in Peaceville and accidentally hurt her back. She was in the hospital for about a week or so, and I used to visit her at that time. During the interim, I went to the city solicitor's office and talked to Aaron Jaffe and told him, Aaron, you got to settle this case for my fiance. And he said, Roland, she was only a temporary employee, but maybe we can work something out. So I finally settled the case with him. During the time of our courtship, would have lasted from the time I met her in 1930 until October 21st of 1933. On that particular date, I had tickets for the Notre Dame Carnegie Tech football game and was to meet Sylvia at Kaufman's on Diamond Street. And when I met her, we both decided, well, why go to the game? Let's get married. So I tore up the tickets, not wanting anybody to know that we were getting married, because Sylvia at that time was a school teacher and could not teach if she were married. Well, we went on our trip to Wellsburg, West Virginia, which was the married capital of the Pennsylvania couples. During our trip to Wellsburg, we stopped off at the 5 and 10 and went in and bought a 10-cent marriage ring so we would have a ring for the ceremony. When we got to Wellsburg, somebody hopped on the running board of the car, which cars at then had at the time had running board, and he said, "I'll take you to the alderman." Well, I said to him, "How do you know where I'm going?" He says, "I know where you're going." So he did. We went there and got married, and finally went home, and that was the beginning of our secret for a period of 2 years until the time I went to Harrisburg with the federal government and the Public Works Department with Edward Jones, who was the administrator.
My hand's tired. This is Violet Marcus and Bell Stock. On January 5th, 1992, we are interviewing Roland Miller.
Did it go down again?
Roland, the last session you told us about how you went to Wellsburg to marry Sylvia, and you were married secretly for 2 years. You also told us off the record that you had a religious ceremony. Do you want to pick it up for us from there?
On December 30th, 1935, which was date that Sylvia came to Harrisburg, and I had arranged previously with Rabbi Gelb of the Temple Bethel in Harrisburg, a conservative synagogue, to perform a marriage ceremony to comply with our religious beliefs. On December 30th, we went to the temple and Rabbi Gelb performed the marriage ceremony with the accompanying kopi and the broken glass and all the accompaniments. That was after, of course, we obtained a license at the courthouse in Harrisburg for Dauphin County.
One down, you're putting two down.
No, goes down.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
Mr. Miller, what happened between the time you got married in Harrisburg and you came back to Pittsburgh?
While in Harrisburg, we became involved in the Jewish life of the city. I was secretary of the Zionist organization of Harrisburg at one time, and my wife Sylvia became a very interest in Hadassah. We had many friends, and we had joined the Temple Bethel and its life within the synagogue and its affairs.
And when did you come back to Pittsburgh, and why, if you can recall?
I came back to Pittsburgh in around January of 1940, when the Edward Jones left the Public Works Department, and I thought it best we return to Pittsburgh rather than work for someone I was not familiar with. At the time I came back to Pittsburgh, I was employed in a short while with the United States Department of Interior under the Guffey Coal Act, named for Senator Guffey, who introduced the bill that all users of coal commercially would be liable to join the organization and pay their respective taxes on the coal handled by them. The work with the Interior Department, which was during the winter season and spring, became too difficult for me, which required much travel and some visits into the coal mines of the area, which was in western Pennsylvania, south and north. I remained with the Interior Department for only a period of 6 months, after which I was employed by the Treasury Department in the Collector of Internal Revenues office under Walter L. Miller, no relative. Walter Miller had been the personnel director under the Public Works Department in Harrisburg, and asked me to come with him as his a legal counselor. He created a legal department particularly for me, and I remained with the Treasury Department doing various duties under that role. Later, I was requested by Charles Ohl, who was the United States Attorney. I remained with the Treasury Department until the fall of 1944, when Mr. Ohl asked me to come up to his department as an assistant United States attorney, but employed actually by the United States Department of Justice as a special attorney working out of Washington, but assigned to Pittsburgh. The relation with Charles Ohl began when I was working with the Treasury Department and had advised him on various tax matters which became important to his office.
What about your social life once you returned to Pittsburgh, Roland? Where did you go on vacations? What did you do? What hobbies did you have? What affiliation did you make here in the city?
Well, we didn't have too much.
In the meantime, Buck was born.
Mr. Miller, do you have a family? Did you have children?
While I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I was trying an eminent domain case before Judge McVicker and a jury on a case of taking of property for the federal government in Westmoreland County.